This week on Making Contact.
A lot of musicians here in New Orleans stayed in New Orleans because it was affordable to live here. And now that rents are like four times what it used to be, I mean, you go from paying $300 a month to $1,200 a month, it kind of like pushes you out of the market. So,
music and the people who play it. Musicians have always been the heart and soul of New Orleans. And like everyone else in the flood-damaged city, they're struggling to survive. 2 years after the disaster, only half of the residents have returned, and large swaths of the region remain as uninhabitable as the day the levees broke. And yet the bands play on. On this edition, correspondent Reese Ehrlich talks with musicians to learn how the historic New Orleans music scene endures, and how new influences are bringing hope to the struggling city. I'm Tina Rubio, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, battle ideas, and important information.
It was a stormy day in 2006, nearly 1 year after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. Trumpeter Terrence Blanchard is driving me through the neighborhood where he grew up in 1962. Blanchard is a world-famous jazz artist and composer. He says this part of New Orleans looks like a war zone. Entire areas are swept clean of buildings. One car sits flattened on top of another. The hurricane winds picked up one large house and deposited it across the street. The debris in this poor, mostly African-American neighborhood was not cleaned up for 5 months. The graffiti on one house says it all. It reads simply, Baghdad. Blanchard stops the car and points to one devastated house. It's his mother's.
This is the house that I grew up in, right here. And you can kind of still see where the water line was. You can see that the water's about 12 feet high there. So when you walk into the house, even the ceiling had just disintegrated. You know, it looked like a science fiction novel or something because, you know, with all of the ductwork hanging down, it just looked very eerie. Everything in there is gone. I mean, just totally gone. And when I came back here, the first thing that blew my mind was all of the grass was dead, the trees were dead, everything was dead. There were no insects, and you didn't see any birds flying over. There was just no life here. The only thing you heard was just silence.
In 2006, Blanchard wrote the score for Spike Lee's documentary film, When the Levees Broke. In that film, he accompanied his mother, Wilhelmina, to view her home for the first time after the flooding.
Look, this thing's way over here.
What is that?
That's the thing you gave me. It was over here. What is that over there?
That should look like your china closet.
The china closet don't have any business being over here. It's in the den.
I know. You can rebuild this stuff.
Yeah, that's easier said than done.
When the hurricane hit, it caused damage. But the real devastation occurred when the man-made levees broke and flooded wide swaths of the city. In the view of many residents, the federal, state, and local authorities have failed to rebuild the city. Some 485,000 people lived in New Orleans before Katrina. Today, it's less than half that. To understand why, we have to go back to August 29, 2005, when the hurricane first hit. Spike Lee's film captures the terror of the storm.
The wind is rolling. It's rolling too much. I mean, there's tin flying off this. Everything is ripping the whole aluminum siding of the building off. You can actually hear it being peeled like somebody. It's just like that Daryl Hannah movie from a long time ago, the 50-foot woman or whatever the hell she was. That's what Katrina was. She was peeling our shit apart.
Got worse and worse and worse. I mean, it was just incredible, the sound. It was like having a freight train in your ear for hours on end, just it's just almost, you can't describe it because it's deafening. You can't even hear yourself think after a while.
Lee conducted interviews with nearly 100 people, ordinary residents, local politicians, federal officials, celebrities, and reporters. In many cases, he lets New Orleans music tell the story, as when we see a montage of the city with Louis Armstrong's famous song in the background.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss it each night and day?
Early in the film, experts noted that a relatively low-level water surge from Katrina caused a key levee to collapse. In an interview with me, Lee says the people of New Orleans blamed the federal government for the ensuing catastrophe.
The levees and the flood walls operated by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, and even they admitted that their work was subpar. So people have died, and who knows what the real actual loss of property is. And I just think that with a debacle like this, people need to go to prison.
Lee also argues that the Bush administration was mainly responsible for the slow response to the tragedy.
The residents of the Gulf Coast were not a priority for this administration. Actions speak louder than words, and two times this past, in the last 2 years, with earthquakes and tsunamis, the United States of America has gone more than halfway around the world and was there in 2 days. And it took the same government 4 days to reach New Orleans.
The film also includes accusations of some in New Orleans that the government intentionally dynamited the levees in order to save rich white neighborhoods from flooding.
We heard a big boom noise, boom! And it was loud, loud, loud.
Yes, yeah. I heard the explosion. We heard it first, the echo from here.
I think the lever cracked, and they helped it the rest of the week. They had a bomb. They bombed that sucker.
Lee emphasizes the desperation of those beliefs by mixing the sound of swooping helicopters with the jazz score. Ultimately, Lee does give greater weight to community voices and experts who say there was no such intentional destruction. He interviews Tulane University engineering professor Calvin Mackey, then local political leader Henry Rodriguez.
I don't believe that the levees were blown. I believe that my people heard explosions. When water gushed through a gaping hole, you have a crack that go from being a crack to a gaping hole, you're gonna hear some type of sound. The levees gave.
I don't think it was blown up, I'll be honest with you. I think what they heard was it was a possibility. They could have heard the snapping of the ropes that hold these barges together. I almost had to believe that they heard the barge hit the concrete wall.
Today, 2 years after Katrina hit, New Orleans is still nowhere near back to normal. The office buildings downtown and the famous French Quarter are back in business, but entire neighborhoods remain uninhabited because there are no city services or money available to rebuild. The city's musicians face problems typical of other residents. Keith Frazier of the Rebirth Brass Band evacuated to Dallas. I interviewed him at the 2007 New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival.
A lot of musicians in New Orleans stayed in New Orleans because it was affordable to live here. And now that rents are like four times what it used to be, I mean, you go from paying $300 a month to $1,200 a month, it kind of like pushes you out of the market. So you have to find a home in another area that's closer to New Orleans, such as Baton Rouge or Lafayette, to try to just stay close to New Orleans to make your normal gigs that you would make. So guys like myself were still in Dallas and Houston and Atlanta, and we just commute from wherever we are to make our normal gigs here.
Terrence Blanchard says some musicians are working, but ironically, not as much as just after the crisis.
The few guys that are here are working. They're playing all of the clubs. One of the interesting situations was that there were a lot of guys that got a lot of work touring, which was really great because, you know, people wanted to do whatever they could to help musicians. So a lot of guys were going all over the place, man, you know, going all over the world. And that was really great.
Blanchard says those jobs have largely ended. New Orleans, like African famine or 9/11, doesn't draw the same sympathy as before.
New Orleans musicians fatigue. I kind of figured that was going to happen because, you know, look, we live in an age now, you know, no disrespect to your industry, but we live in an age now where we have news cycles. You know what I mean? And we're not part of that news cycle anymore like we were at one point. You know, just as the 9/11 survivors had their moment in time. It's a rough thing, you know, and when people ask me now, they say, what can I do to help New Orleans? I say, don't send money. Keep the story alive. Keep talking about it. Keep asking questions.
Blanchard says musicians, like others, have settled down in other cities and may not be able to move back.
They have children that are in school, you know, for a second year outside New Orleans, you know, and they're making some heavy decisions about whether they're even going to come back. I talked to one guy, and he said he's living in Dallas now, and he's loving where he is. So, I mean, it's kind of sad to say I don't think he's going to come back at all, and he's a major guy here. And, you know, it kind of breaks your heart, you know, because this is a family community, you know, in terms of the music community here. We're all family, and, you know, I respect his decision, you know, and I understand it. I definitely understand it, you know, but it's one of those things that hurts, but, you know, because it makes you have to deal with the reality of what we're going through, you know, because we all have this idealistic view. You know, our view was that, you know, right after the hurricane, we were going to hear hammers and nails and saws and everything going, and there was just going to be this work going on, and everybody was going to be back in their homes in a couple of months. Well, of course, obviously, that hasn't happened.
Music is more than entertainment in New Orleans. It's been an integral part of the city's culture for over a century. Wynton Marsalis explains that history in the documentary When the Levees Broke.
If you look at our culture, music becomes a part of everyday life. It's not a small thing. People eat and they play music. They got songs for eating. People get out on the street, music is connected to the dance. So there you have it. You got a great church tradition, sanctified church. Every day of my life, he's calling me. Then you got the French people. Man, they love music. They got the French opera. You know, you could be a slave, and you could go to Congo Square, and you could go to the opera. Where were you going to do that in the rest of the United States of America? You couldn't do that in Boston.
Marsalis says African-American culture even influences death rituals. The famous New Orleans funeral marching bands were some of the earliest creators of jazz.
A jazz funeral is a ceremony. You bring the body out to the grave and you play slow hymns and dirges, the traditional dirges like, "Near My God to Thee," "Flee as a Bird."
And that's the mourning part. You give in to your grief, and you know that you won't see them again, but you just were happy to know who they were and be a part of their life.
And then they say some words over the deceased out at the burial site, and then you start to play the up-tempo, happy songs. You play a parade from there.
And that's the celebratory part. It's the whole yin and the yang of the beginning and the end. Because, yeah, I'm sad you're gone, but damn, it sure was nice to know you.
New Orleans jazz drummer Shannon Powell told me that the up-tempo, happy sound of New Orleans jazz also reflects residents' determination to rebuild.
This spirit has a certain vibe and spirit to it that no matter what go on, we'll always come back. And we'll come back strong. And I'm a true believer of that because I am a real citizen of New Orleans. I tell this story all the time. If the city would have went under and there was nothing to come back to, Shannon Powell would have been back anyway, with or without my wife and children, because this is my hometown, this is where I was born and raised, and this is where I love.
Coming up next, correspondent Reese Ehrlich reveals how new musical influences are bringing hope to a struggling city. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. For more information, or for a CD copy of this program, please call 800-529-5736, or you can get our podcast at radioproject.org.
New Orleans is not just a home to African-American music anymore. Immediately after the hurricane hit, thousands of Latino men drove into New Orleans to work on clearing rubble and rebuilding the city. So in some parts of New Orleans, you are likely to hear the music of groups such as Mexico's Banda El Recodo. Mm-hmm. Marisa Rodriguez, who hosts a Mexican music show on the local Spanish language station, got in a car to show me around the parts of New Orleans now heavily populated by Latino immigrants.
A month after the hurricane, there was an influx of migrant workers. The word got around and, you know, it was definitely a lot of money to be made here. So this was where the place to come and work.
New Orleans culture is changing. More Mexican restaurants have popped up and bars now play norteñas. Major Mexican singing groups such as Los Tigres del Norte, which had not played New Orleans in the past, performed here in early 2007. The new immigrants love the music of groups such as Los Bravos del Norte de Ramón Ayala. The rancheras, norteñas, and banda music often describe the hardscrabble life in rural Mexico. Those lyrics apply to the immigrant experience in New Orleans as well. Latinos tell numerous stories of contractors who refuse to pay wages and police who shake them down for bribes. Wilfredo Guzman, a Honduran immigrant who works as a roofer, says times are hard and wages are low, about $10 an hour for unskilled labor.
Nos agrupamos para que podamos pagar cómodamente la renta.
We live together in order to pay the rent. If a house costs $1,200 a month, five or six of us will share that house, so we end up paying about $200 a person. We try to send money to our families back home, but at times we can't. It costs a lot to eat, buy clothing, and pay rent. We have to work like burros to send any money home.
Worse still, says Guzman, there aren't as many jobs for Latino laborers.
There used to be a lot of work, but not anymore. I don't know why. Maybe there's not as much money, or the cost of insurance is too high. Other immigrants continue to come, but there's no work for them. Everyone says there will be work in 3 days, or a week, or in a month. So we wait. Many people can't decide whether to leave or to stay.
Before Hurricane Katrina, the city had a small Latino community made up mostly of Central Americans. Now, some Latinos from other parts of the U.S. are coming in hopes of setting up stores to meet the needs of Mexican laborers.
Drink water, man. Where is water?
Give me another water.
Another water?
Francisco Flores and his family commute from Nacogdoches, Texas, after having set up a small store in a New Orleans area where a lot of the new immigrants live.
We provide groceries like tortillas, you know, and jalapenos, and, you know, all kind of food. And they know we're here. We send the money to Mexico and to hold the Central America. Yeah, and we sell phone cards. You know, they're looking for phone cards. We're thinking about coming and live over here, you know. We're in an apartment. We're back and forth right now, but we're thinking about coming and live over here.
The Flores family wants to move permanently to the Crescent City. Business is good, and New Orleans has a lot of attractions that you just don't get in Nacogdoches. Flores appreciates the varied kinds of music of New Orleans.
I listen to Spanish music most of the rancheras, yeah, mariachi.
Yeah,
we also sell music over here.
Now, you know New Orleans is famous, like the jazz festival.
Oh, yeah.
Famous for New Orleans-style jazz and R&B. And so, do you listen to that at all?
Oh, yeah, well, a little bit, you know, not much. You know, there are a lot of Spanish people, they listen. Yeah, but now they're going to have, I think, one big band, Spanish band, famous. La Banda del Recodo, that's a big one in Mexico.
At least some of the Latino laborers also say they will be staying. Construction worker Guzman says he would like to bring his family and settle down. He's learned to appreciate New Orleans jazz.
Oh, muy bueno también.
Sí, ¿le gusta?
Sí, sí, bastante.
I think New Orleans music is very good. I heard it during Mardi Gras. A lot of people were having a good time dancing.
Mucha gente bailando, alegre.
Radio programmer Marisa Rodriguez, who came to New Orleans from Mexico many years ago, expects some of the new immigrants to remain and enrich the city's multi-ethnic heritage.
The fact that people start to accept the music, more open to accept the music, I think it is a sign that they're starting to accept the city, to accept the culture. And yeah, definitely, they're gonna be trapped in the culture, and that's what happens. That's what happened to me. They'll end up staying.
Some Latino musicians who have lived in New Orleans for many years developed interesting fusions of Latin and New Orleans musical styles, and they too were displaced by the flooding.
My name is Joe Cabral. I'm one of the founding members of the Iguanas, along with Rod Hodges, and we're here in Rod's car, cruising near the lake. Go straight, Rod, we'll go up to Paris Avenue. They had 8 to 12 feet of water. And we kind of go up here a little bit. So I live half a block over here, and we had only 3 to 4 feet on our property. And this is my property here.
Oh, really? Okay.
That piano that's out in the front yard was my Steinway piano, and you know, yeah, completely. I mean, here's like, you know, some of my instruments. So there's some saxophones that were flooded out.
Joe Cabral and his fiancée lost virtually all of the contents of their house, but they are relatively lucky because they still have a house. After a lot of renovation, they expect to move back in soon. But even in this upper-middle-class section of New Orleans, nearly 2 years after the disaster, the neighborhood remains largely deserted because of the lack of infrastructure.
We didn't get power to our house until April of 06, right? Yeah. So it took us a while. We got phone service at the house in November of 06. No post office. There's one gas station about a mile away. There's a little cafe and a coffee shop that just opened up not too long ago, within the last 6 months.
Members of the Iguanas immigrated to New Orleans from various parts of the country. Co-founder Rod Hodges grew up in Northern California listening to Chicano bands like Malo. Since moving to New Orleans, he has also been influenced by the city's musical styles.
This liquor tastes like Mother Earth to me. I'm gonna drink till I'm all alone in Zacatecas.
He wrote the song Zacatecas while visiting that Mexican state and coming across some men digging a grave for a relative. Hodges and fellow band member Joe Cabral explain what they saw.
They were waiting for the body to arrive. They were digging the grave and they were drinking tequila. And one of the guys had just passed out on top of that heap of dirt. Right.
Passed on top of this mound, he was just like out, you know.
Drunk or?
Well, yeah, maybe both.
He was crying.
He was wailing, you know. He was like, oh. People digging the hole were people related to the hole E.
Cabral says that experience inspired the song lyrics.
You know, it's basically painting this picture of that day in the hot cemetery in the desert. This liquor tastes like Mother Earth to me. I'm gonna drink till I can't see. I'm all alone in Zacatecas.
I'm all alone in Zacatecas. Zacatecas.
Other bands have mixed the picante of Latin music with the gumbo of New Orleans jazz. Javier Gutierrez, founder of the New Orleans salsa band Vivas, left Bolivia and came to the Big Easy as a teenager in 1979.
Guys, ready? Yeah. All right, this is Vivas from New Orleans. Have fun. Let's go.
Gutierrez had studied classical guitar and choral music, but the New Orleans scene changed his musical outlook forever.
New Orleans is a beautiful city, talking about music, for instance, because it's such an eclectic group of people and cultures here in New Orleans that it's easy to play any type of music, actually. All the Caribbean, all the South American music and African, it's incredible. So we felt very comfortable playing the music that we play here.
Since there aren't that many experienced Latino salsa musicians in the Crescent City, Gutierrez hired local talent. 6 of the 10 band members are Anglos.
Right now we have one of the guys that plays in the Dukes of Dixieland. He's the main trumpet player. and he plays with us. His name is Mike Fulton. But even though that we don't play New Orleans music, the rhythms that we play, they're so connected to the second line rhythm. That rhythm, boom, boom, boom. It's like, and I say, you know what? All we have to do there, add some congas and some horns and lyrics, and we have, people are gonna love it because it's, the rhythm is so close.
A number of groups have combined Latin music with that second line rhythm, named after the singers and dancers who follow second after the musicians at jazz funerals. The group Jose Conde y Ola Fresca fuses funk with mambo, including a hot drum solo by legendary New Orleans drummer Zigaboo Morales. Vivas, Otra Fresca, and the Iguanas are just three of many groups fusing Latin and New Orleans musical sounds. Joe Cabral explains the musical voodoo that holds the city's musicians spellbound.
You know, we came here because of the music. Well, this is where it seems to emanate from, so why don't we plug into it? And we have been fortunate in that, we've been somewhat successful, you know, and be able to take what we love and what we've learned from this place and make it our own, and I think give a little bit back to what it's given to us.
The demographics of New Orleans are changing. More Latinos will move in, well-to-do whites and some middle-income African Americans have been able to return, or never got displaced at all. But working-class African Americans, the soul of New Orleans, face the most problems. The federal government has allocated $110 billion for Gulf Coast relief, but most went for immediate costs, such as temporarily housing people in motels. Trumpeter Terrence Blanchard says not enough of that money has gotten to those who need it most.
What is the problem with the federal government cutting the check? We're spending all this money in Iraq and in Afghanistan, but we're spending all of that money over there, and the money that could help these people get back on their feet is minuscule by comparison.
And the big corporations haven't done their share either, says Blanchard. Before Katrina, the city had other businesses, including a growing biomedical industry. Those other sources of income have almost disappeared. Blanchard says the private sector has a responsibility to do more than just promote tourism.
Some of the big corporations that want to donate money, they shouldn't donate money. They need to open up offices here. They need to create jobs here. They need to create some commerce instead of just writing a check. And little things like that can go an extremely long way to help rebuild in a city.
Government authorities have failed the people of New Orleans, but grassroots efforts are bringing people back to the city. It won't be the New Orleans of old, but the city's culture and musical heritage will survive. For Making Contact, I'm Reese Ehrlich, New Orleans.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Dan Turner, the Monday Morning Breakfast crew, and to Steve Macer. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. For a CD copy of program number 3207, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736, or you can get our podcast at radioproject.org. Lisa Redman is our executive director, Matt Fidler, sound editor, Samson Rainey, Puck Lowe, and Joaquin Palloman, interns, and I'm senior producer Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.